Yeah, we're breaking it down from the court to the field. Behind every stat, there's a truth revealed. From the draft day dreams to the final shot. From the locker room talks to the battles fought. Clutch moments caught under stadium lights. Every win, every loss, every high, every fight. Beyond the numbers, where the heart beats loud.
Beyond the numbers,
where the hustle gets crowned.
Beyond the numbers,
this story we chase. Welcome to the podcast, this is your space.
What up, everybody? Welcome back to the next episode of Beyond the Numbers. As always, I am one of your hosts, Will, and this is Ben.
Hello.
You guys, today we're going to be going over week 10.
Which one? Yep, week 10.
Week 10 of the NFL. So much to talk about, so much to see. There's a lot of stuff to unpack here. We're going to get into that here later into the episode, but today we're going to be starting off with college.
Absolutely.
Sir, we're going to let you start off with your Cardinals. I'm going to start by saying I called it.
All right. Let's just put this out there. Yes, the Cardinals lost to Cal. Yes, we lost at home against what I would consider to be a much lesser of a team. Very painful. A lot of bad decisions, I think, from Brom in the regards to how he made play calls. But more importantly and more concerningly for me is the fact that I believe Miller Moss is borderline useless as a quarterback. His start wasn't the best, but there was potential, and he has dwindled drastically. And what he has done with the Cards, and unfortunately with a team like he has around him, I think the problem really lays at his feet. A lot of poor decision making, a lot of just lack of motivation, I feel like. Some of the play calls we've seen throughout the year maybe weren't the best for him, but like he could have adapted. He could have done something. But that game against Cal, the last little portion of it where they just gave up, bro, that's ridiculous. He didn't even look like he knew what to do. I'm confused. It's why we're struggling so much on one hand, because we have some great receivers in Bell and Lacey. We have Isaac Brown. We have Duke Watson, we have the other Brown. And ironically, they're not related. But, we have a really good offense around Miller Moss. The offensive line isn't terrible. They can give him a pocket, okay? Our defense is suspect, but honestly, our defense isn't bad. Our defense has done really well against some of the better teams. Granted, we're not exceptional, but we've done well. And I at the end of the day, I lay a lot of this loss at Brom's feet and in Moss's feet, because really the play calling should have been, I think, adjusted. I mean, you got some third downs that you're running on third and longs. Like, you shouldn't be doing that. It's one of the things I've questioned all year. Some of the wins we've gotten were close because of the weird play calls we've made. I get it. Isaac Brown's one of the best running backs in college football right now. In fact, he is, I think, still currently leading the NCAA in rushing yards. But we're not converting that into wins. Yes, we're 7-2. We're not out of it yet. You know, we're facing Clemson at home on Friday, 7:30 p.m. For those of you in the area who want to tune in, I highly recommend. It'll be on ESPN, I do believe. I might have to double-check that. But regardless, it is going to be a phenomenal game, and there's a lot on the line for your boys in Louisville. Not so much for Clemson, 4-5. Their season's over, but not Louisville's. We are fortunate that Virginia took an L, so the ACC has gotten a little bit more intense. But, this is a top 25 game coming on this Friday. We share a top 25 game with another one with Oregon. Oregon and Minnesota have a little bit more to go back and forth on. Oregon has a little more on the line, I think, than even Louisville does right now, because unfortunately, taking that L is frustrating. because unfortunately that really damages our standings for the college football playoffs. But Friday's going to be good. Two really good games. The Oregon-Minnesota game ain't no sleeper either.
I'm just going to – you know, I live right up the street from the stadium. Like, literally can see it from my house. And it was funny. Like, I kept on hearing the fireworks go off. It was boom, boom, boom. And slowly but surely, those fireworks started going off less and less. And at the end of the game, they just set off one boom. I just died laughing. Look, the Cardinals, I am a Louisville native, so I don't like downing the Cardinals too bad, but the Cardinals are so cocky sometimes. The Louisville Cardinal Football Club is so cocky sometimes, and that's why they fall. They fell in this game because they didn't think they could lose it. Plain and simple. Those play calls happened because they thought that it was sweet over there in California. They played them boys like they were sweet and then got dealt a loss in overtime. Pretty much. And that game shouldn't have even been as close as it was. I'm not saying that it shouldn't have been a blowout or they should have never scored. I'm saying that they definitely shouldn't have let them beat them. But neither here nor there. I'm not going to long talk it. I believe you just did that enough for both of us. Moving on, Ole Miss beat the Citadel 49-0.
I would hope so.
I love my team. That's the team that I love going for the most in college. That Ole Miss definitely does basketball and football well. So I had to shout that out, even though it was up against the Citadel. 49 points is always impressive. Miami, another one of my favorite teams, beat Syracuse 38-10. Talk about BTA, my boy.
Talk about too little too late.
Doesn't matter. I just love to see it.
Well,
moving into next week for college football. Like you said, you got Clemson for Louisville next week. You also have Georgia Tech up against Boston College. You also have Texas Tech up against UCF. We got some good games. Ohio State up against UCLA.
I like the Texas.
You think the Ohio State's going to drop any this season? They're sitting at 9-0. They're the only team other than Indiana to be – Oh no, at Texas A&M. Woo.
I was gonna say you got Texas A&M's.
But other than that, there are no other undefeated teams. Do you think Ohio State's gonna drop any? Do you think Indiana's gonna drop any?
I think
who do you think they're gonna drop to?
Okay, so I've been looking at all three of the undefeated teams in their schedule. So Indiana, right, they've only got a couple more games. They've got and they got lucky in some ways against Penn State. They kind of played down. Penn State's no slouch. I don't care what the record shows. They've never been. Even through their worst years, they've always been competitive. So I never sleep on what Penn State can do. So Indiana beat them, which is essential. They've got Wisconsin. And then they've got Purdue. Now, if I'm going to be honest with you, I don't think they're going to drop to either of these teams. I don't see that happening. However, if it's going to happen to one of them, it's probably going to be Wisconsin. Again, I don't believe it's going to happen. I think they're going to stay undefeated. As far as Ohio State, it's one of those things where it doesn't matter who you play at the end of the day. Ohio State has to play. They also obviously have UCLA. Then they have Rutgers, and then they have Michigan. Now, Michigan is 7-2. They're 21st in the nation. So Rutgers is sitting at 5-5. I don't think Rutgers is going to do it. I don't think they're the upset. Michigan is the upset if there's going to be one. It's always been, and I lived up there for 13 years. I've seen how that rivalry works. And Michigan is an incredibly aggressive team when it comes to Ohio State. They both go at each other like dogs. I mean, you're talking when there's going to be a fight in college football, this is going to be one of those games where you can almost expect to see some hands getting thrown. I doubt they're dropping to UCLA. I don't think UCLA has any fire in them. Rutgers, they're mediocre. Their 5-5 record is reflective of the people they play. Michigan, however, even at 7-2, they ain't a joke. And they could definitely, if they could beat Ohio State, they could make a possible argument for convincing the committee for the college football playoffs to potentially take a good look at them as we go into the final stretch to see if they could possibly creep in. Don't know that it would happen, but if there's going to be a game that's going to be dropped, it's going to be the Michigan game, and it's very legitimately possible. That's the game, the last game of the year for them. Ohio State has to watch for it because they can't take off the gas on that one. That one could be problematic. Even if they lose, yes, they're still going to the playoffs. So there's no ish. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. But that's to answer that question. It would definitely be specifically Michigan. The only other undefeated team, like you mentioned, is, of course, Texas A&M. They got South Carolina. That's going to be harmless for them, I think, unless they play dumb. Then they've got Samford, and then they've got Texas. Just like Ohio State, Michigan are brutal, Texas and Texas A&M, it's going to be brutal. I doubt they're dropping to Samford, who sits at 1-9, because Samford's pretty much, you know, minor leagues at this point in comparison. And really, that's what they are. They're the minor leagues of college football. And then they've got, you know, kind of relax after this South Carolina game, to relax Samford, take it easy. And then they play Texas. Texas has taken a fall this year. Even at 7-2, they got a couple games left, of course. But my, oh, my, how the mighty Texas Longhorns have fallen. It's going to be a bloodbath of a game, too. I think that one's going to be a big deal. I could see, ironically, out of the three undefeated teams, the only one that I think I legitimately see remaining undefeated, and it's not Ohio State, and it's not Texas A&M, so of course it is none other than Indiana. I think Indiana is the only one that might have a legitimate claim right now to say that their schedule alone is enough to get them through undefeated to the playoffs.
I mean, it sounds good to me. I would say the same thing. Texas, even though they're taking a fall this year, I think they'll take that Texas A&M just to prove that they can. And also Ohio State, they're the Buckeyes. But if they don't go undefeated, who cares? They're still the Buckeyes. So
I mean, they're the reigning champs. If they lose to the Wolverines, it's not out of character. It doesn't matter about their record. That game is never going to be about the record. That game is always going to be who can absolutely brutalize the other more. That's where I feel like that game tends to have a lot of injuries, tends to have a lot of penalties. The atmosphere that these two teams, when they play each other, bring, which is one of the reasons I believe it's at the end of the year typically, or at least in the second half, is because they will just dog on each other. You're going to see some pretty nasty hits in this game. And for Michigan, they really need that win if they want to have a shot at it. They're just a little further down in the polls than they need to be. And upsetting Ohio State, don't know that it'd be enough. But if they're going to have an argument and a shot at this, they have to win out, and then they have to beat out Ohio State. And that could potentially change something for them.
Yeah, we'll see. These games are going to be some good ones to close out the season. The regular season. So we'll see how all these undefeated teams lie. Go Indiana, and Wolves better get it together.
Louisville's got to get it together, because really right now we're fighting against Georgia Tech. We're fighting against Virginia. We're competing against Notre Dame and Pitt. You know, these are teams that are all sitting there with a better or equal to record of Louisville. And we're all fighting, even Miami at 7-2. You know, we're fighting for against all of these teams for are probably the only spot that the ACC is going to get. They're only going to get one team in. I don't think it's going to go in any other direction. But the Notre Dame Pitt game and the Texas Georgia, those are some pretty big games for standings, potential standings going into this weekend. Of course, Louisville and Clemson, a big deal. Virginia, they got a win against Duke. Georgia Tech, I doubt they're going to struggle against Boston College. Miami has to beat North Carolina State. And I will say this, NC State is not slouching this year. Even though they're 5-4 and they're not going to do a lot, I'll take them over the Bill Belichick-led North Carolina Tar Heels. Whew. I'm just going to leave it my part of college on Bill Belichick should not be a coach in the NFL. And clearly shouldn't be a coach right now in college. Can't stand the man, and I'm going to leave college football alone. And if you have anything else, take it away.
I'm going to just respond to that last comment you said. Granted, he shouldn't be a college football coach right now, but his legacy in the NFL speaks for itself, and I'm not going to let you take that away as a Patriots, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick Patriots fan. All right,
sir. I'm gonna just drop it. I can't get it. Sorry.
Go ahead. Just go ahead and drop it. We're gonna move on, you guys. Speaking of the NFL, week 10 was a movie, to say the least. So, starting off with our Maryland game, we're gonna go into how the Falcons almost beat the Colts, sir.
Indeed, and it took overtime to get it done for the Colts.
But Jonathan Taylor did exactly what he always does. Just demolished them in every single way that he possibly could. 244 yards rushing with three touchdowns it's absolutely diabolical to let somebody run all over you like that. These are numbers unheard of.
Let's be clear. This is why Jonathan Taylor, when we in our last episode, we talked about top 10 right now at the midpoint of the season for MVP. This is why Jonathan Taylor sets it number 2. He really should be at number 1 if we're just going based off performance. I get it. Like, I agree with you on the whole team changing aspect. But, like, again, unless Jonathan Taylor is not doing his job, then the rest of the team struggles. But when he's doing his job, they don't lose. I mean –
When I watched that game, it was a slaughter for the run game. All they had to do was give it to him. That's it. Daniel Jones didn't even have to do too much work, and he still put up 255 yards passing. But he didn't actually have to put in the work to win.
The only concerning thing I will say. They were inconsistent, and I always preach about how games are won in the second half, and this is actually very valid here, because technically going into the half, the Colts were losing 14-13. It took the fourth quarter, and then obviously overtime, but it took the fourth quarter for them to get back and tie the game up. The Colts really killed my parlays because I had different things mixed in there and I paid the price for it. Even though they won, they didn't cover the spread.
Don't talk to me about a parlay.
Yeah, they didn't cover the spread.
I took that 6-5 spread and they won by 6.
They don't go for the extra point. They don't go for the extra point in overtime. Once it's done, it's done. And it really irritates me. They should still have to go for the extra point. And then I took Tyler Warden. Yeah, and I took Tyler Warren to be an anytime touchdown scorer. And let me tell you, 8 catches for 99 yards, but not a single tutty? Come on.
Absolutely
but
then I see ridiculous. Jones. I had either Alec Pierce or Tyler Warren, and since he didn't get in for those last two games, I figured he would finally target him, and he targeted Pierce. It's just that game killed my parlays as well.
I lost one for $1,000, sir. Ooh. It hurt my soul. But, you know, kudos to the Colts defense in the end for doing it. He sacked Penix three times. He only threw one touchdown. I mean, there wasn't anything exceptional. Bijan didn't do a lot. I mean, he did 17 for 84. Algier ran 11 for 57. I mean, when we're being honest, the rushing game for the Falcons wasn't shabby. Algier got two touchdowns. The fact that it wasn't at least one of them to Bijan, it goes to show, and I remember this 2 years ago and last year, Algier is quietly one of the mainstays to that offense. Bijan gets a lot of touches, but even though he out-touched and out-ran Tyler, Tyler still got both of the tutties. And I like Algier. Honestly, I take him sometimes for anytime touchdown scorers over Bijan, because Bijan is – defenses lock him down. And then Algier comes in, and boom, suddenly you got this man breaking free. I remember when Bijan's first year, his rookie year, Algier was going nuts. And I think there were people that were wondering, like, oh, man, is Bijan going to be the backup? Because this dude was going crazy. And the fact that they've kept the two of them together, they really complement each other. It's not the same as, you know, Montgomery and Gibbs or Walker and Charbonnet. You know, it's not the same as those combos. But, I mean, they're good. But yet, they didn't win. I want to point out, though, and I'm not going to just leave the Falcons defense out of here. I want to point out that Daniel Jones spent some time on the ground, sir. Got sacked seven times. And I do believe that was a contributing factor. The amount of pressure he spent, he was under most of the game, was a big part of the reason that they struggled. That offensive line is starting to have some, well, as many offensive lines do once you hit that midpoint of the year, they start to wear down. I think that's what we're seeing here. I think we're starting to see that little bit of decline here, because this wasn't a normal Indianapolis Colts victory from this year. Outside of that game against...
This was a struggle. This was a struggle.
Yeah, it was a struggle. Like,
I don't like that. Like, I was just about to say, I don't like the fact that the Falcons actually looked good, though their numbers looked horrible. Like, that it was, it's just not okay for me.
And I think the problem isn't, Daniel Jones isn't necessarily the problem in this game. The offensive line is. Jonathan Taylor ran all day, but when they passed, constant pressure. The Colts offensive line needs to pull back together, get back into early season form, protect their quarterback, prevent the turnovers. You know, that interception that happened could have probably been avoided with less pressure. Obviously, every quarterback would do better with less, but when you're getting sacked constantly in a game, or you're getting hit and pressured constantly, you're going to make mistakes. And honestly, I give him a shout out. He only threw one pick. That's not bad. It's really not. And I mean, at the end of the day,
ugly though. That was an ugly one.
Now, here's the other thing with Daniel Jones, and I want to say this too. He had three fumbles. As Jonathan Taylor had one too, by the way. I don't know if you knew that or not. Yeah. But
I watched this whole game. I had to. Yeah. I had to see where everything was going to happen, especially because it was the start of the parlays, of course. So, you know, I watched the whole game. There was a lot of ugliness to how the Colts play, the Colts offensive line played. And you're right, that caused a whole lot of the problems for the Colts. But also, the Colts, I could feel the decline, and I don't like it. Jonathan Taylor can show out all he wants to, but if they can't pass the ball, they're not going to be able to move the ball against other teams. The Falcons just suck. We all know that. And the fact that they've been able to pull off these wins against these teams, the teams that they have, is absolutely absurd.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. It is. And the Colts have I'm not going to say that they have some work to do. They just need to, like you said, early season form. Go ahead and get back to the basics. And however y'all started off, whatever y'all was doing, the morning chant, the drinking, taking a shot of Hennessy before the game, whatever it was, Because Danny Dimes was out there throwing like he was drunk.
He needs some smelling salts that Rodgers is on. I mean, after all, he did lose to Rodgers this year already. So if I were him, I'd get with Aaron and say, yeah, let me get a couple of them smelling salts, bro.
Please and thank you. But all in all, good Colts win. I'll take it. A win's a win, even though it was an ugly win. Moving on.
I want to talk about an ugly win real quick.
Oh, go ahead, sir.
That was the Saints and the Panthers. My.
Ooh, I was waiting to get to that one, but we can go ahead and touch on it because that shocked me. I don't even want to call it an ugly win. That just shocked every bit of my system. When I saw they were winning, I'm like, what?
Yeah, it was ugly. It was. It really was. But it was ugly because I don't know whether it's ugly because of the Saints and how they performed and how they got their win, or if it was so ugly because the Panthers were just terrible. Like, this performance is what I thought of the Panthers at the beginning of the year coming into this. That's what I expected all year from them, and not this. That's my only thing is like I this game was ugly. Tyler, let me pause myself though real quick. Tyler Shook, I am so glad that he's getting the ball now. I kept saying Spencer Rattler needed to go. People were so hyping him up. I don't know why. This is where they needed to go. They found out, probably a little too late for him this year, but Louisville produces some nice quarterbacks, excluding Miller Moss this year. They've produced some mighty fine quarterbacks, and I like this guy. I was all for saying give him a chance. You know, you were all about give Shador. I was all about give Tyler. This dude he's a good quarterback. He's a very clean quarterback. He doesn't make a lot of bad decisions. Yes, he's had to warm up a little bit, but he went and did 282 yards and 2 touchdowns, completed 70% of his passes. Alvin Kamara, he looked a little bit more comfortable. And you got to think, he knows some of the weights off of him. When Rattler was out there, it wasn't. Now, they ran him 22 times, 83 yards, nothing special. But they still won the game without that. Chris Olave, of course, had himself a phenomenal game. I'm glad I put him on my fantasy roster. And I know we don't talk about fantasy enough. We talk plenty about betting. We really need to start throwing in some fantasy stuff in here. But, man, that man saved me this week in 2 of my leagues. Oh,
hey,
man.
Sir, that's your cup of tea. You know, I don't do the fantasy thing.
I know.
Yeah, whenever you want to throw that in here.
Start Chris Olave. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter who his quarterback was, y'all. Spencer Rattler could throw it to him. Now Tyler Shook's throwing to him. Just starting. Yeah, Reed Shaheed, you know, he got some pipes and popularity, man. I never started him. I never put him in. And he's still a good receiver. But Chris, that is your way. That is the way. Now, to say that I would start Tyler Shook yet, I don't know. He is on my taxi squad currently as the rookie, but next year in several of my leagues, especially my dynasty leagues, I think he might wind up seeing some playtime. But anyway, just a really good game by him. Honestly, I liked it. I ain't got nothing to complain about. I think they did well, but like at the end of the day, it was still ugly. And it was because the Panthers just, I don't know, they made it look for something that happened. Like Rico Dowdle, just saying, he's the only one that got a touchdown. He had himself a mediocre game, but
who else were they going to give it to punch it in? Nobody.
He ain't going to give it to Chuba.
No, they weren't. And we both know that. Even though I'm never going to down talk Chuba. Chuba was legendary last year, and he would, if they hadn't found something in Dowdle this year, he would still be legendary in my eyes. So leave Chuba alone. Hashtag leave Chuba alone. All right.
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to leave him alone just like the Panthers are leaving him alone.
I'm sick of you. All right. since you brought up my guy Shador, they definitely need to give Shador a chance. I don't care what they're talking about over there in the Browns. There's not one reason why Shador has not been put in the game, man. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. They're using Dillon Gabriel right now. Dillon Gabriel, while he had a game, I'm not going to say it was a good one. He was 17 for 32. He threw two touchdowns, but good grief, sir. Where are we going to – when are we going to stop letting all of this just fly over our heads? They are doing the Bull Shador wrong. It doesn't matter how you look at it, square, like try to square it away. Okay, had to use Flacco because he was the veteran. All right, we had to use Gabriel because Gabriel has a little bit more experience than Shador. Where do these losses? I'm not putting the losses on Dillon Gabriel either, by the way. When do these losses start compiling into changes? Because you're not making actual changes. You're literally letting one of, I don't care what anybody says, one of the best prospects off of the draft sit and collect dust. I'm not saying that he had, like, come on now, Cam Ward's in, Jackson Dart's in. We got rookies playing. Cam Scataboo was going absolutely crazy before he got injured. Well, and you're telling me that Shador doesn't have a shouldn't have a chance to at least show that he can. I get it. He's a rookie, and they need to sit and learn the game. Not when the game that he's learning is a losing game. The Browns are now sitting at 2-7, sir.
Okay, hold on. I understand what you're saying. You got to remember, Gabriel's also a rookie. So
don't care.
I don't think you change at quarterback if something's working. I think Shador, I think they're letting him sit this year out unless something happens where he needs to come in, because they are playing the long game with him. Shador will probably be the quarterback in the future for the Browns. Dillon Gabriel is probably going to get himself some trade value, and they're going to wind up trading him off. I doubt that Shador is the one who leaves Cleveland, simply because I agree that Shador is better as a quarterback. We've not seen him really play in the NFL yet outside of preseason, and that just doesn't tell you enough. But I think that the long term is going to be that Cleveland is planning to keep Shador, and they're letting some of the drama and some of the other issues that are going on with him off the field hopefully calm down. Let him get his attitude right, because right now you can't put a guy like him out there and expect him to lead your team. There's going to be a lot of resentment for being brought out in a losing situation, I'm sure. There's going to be probably teammates around him that are going to be like, yeah, we don't really care, bro. You know, you got to think. They drafted a very, very serious potential problem, you know. So Cleveland's got to be smart about this if they want to use him and keep him. And that is, they have to get him calmed down. They have to keep him focused on football, get him off of Deion's coattails, you know, let him simmer and build him up into something bigger and better than anybody would have anticipated, because Cleveland ruins quarterbacks. I don't think that I agree with you on giving him a chance this year, because to be honest, I think you're setting him up for failure. Dillon Gabriel is benefiting from a bad situation where he can come and play and he can just do what he wants to do. There ain't no winning. The season's over. They tried. He quickly, you know, found out that wasn't happening. That defense ain't stopping the teams like the Jets. There ain't no reason the Jets should have won this game, in my opinion. They're just not that good. But they did. The Browns' defense is letting it go. The running game, do not get me wrong, I like Judkins. I think he's really an electrifying running back. But Dillon Gabriel, I mean, the dude ran 5 for 54. He's mobile. He can pass. Let the man eat this
that
year.
That was out of fear. That wasn't.
But let the man
that,
eat.
That wasn't out of design.
Of course, he got sacked 6 times. Absolutely, it was out of fear.
Out of fear. But again, that man was running for his absolute life.
And you know what? You tell me a team that won't look at those numbers next year that needs a quarterback and be like, oh, man, yeah, no. He has the benefit of having over half of a year of starting time in the NFL. With
I
some
can't
actual...
name another team that has as many quarterback problems other than the Jets. And Justin Fields still pulled that win out.
Well, yeah, Justin Fields also should be pulling out that win. The problem is the Jets team as a whole is pitiful. So their defense, they just gave away literally 2 of their biggest players. Why they did that, I don't think anybody's ever going to convince me of. Are they trying to rebuild their defense all over again from scratch? I don't know. But they made some crazy moves. So kudos to them, I guess, but I don't know what they're on. However, again, Dillon Gabriel will probably be gone next year. Shador will probably be running the show. But I think it's a logical, smart decision. And I imagine Shador, who's gotten a lot more laid back since this has happened, will probably be the guy next year. I don't see why not. And Gabriel's going to go to a different team. There ain't no reason that he'll stay in Cleveland. There's no value to him. He's not valuable enough to Cleveland. And if they start him, they're going to have to get rid of Shador. You can't keep both of them. You just can't. There's no logic to it. 2 quarterbacks that you have on rookie contracts, what are you going to do? You got to get a veteran in there at least, somebody who can come in and back up one of them. So you got to get rid of one of them. You can't keep them both. That would make no sense. Where's your veteran leadership in the locker room when it comes to quarterbacks? So one's got to go, and you go get yourself a solid backup who can take over if need be, and you call it a day on whoever you get rid of. And right now, you put the guy that you know is going to fail, but you let him show off. You let him put up some highlights for himself, and you shop him around. And you tell Shador, eat it a little bit since how you handled yourself coming into the draft. You weren't exactly the best. You weren't the most professional. Had a lot of attitude, too cocky, too much swagger. Calm yourself down on the bench. Learn the game. Learn the playbook. And be ready next year. That is the best thing that Cleveland can do, because Gabriel, he's learning how to play. He's having to eat it on the fly. He's having to take these plays as a rookie quarterback. Next year, he won't be a rookie. But next year, I don't think he's going to be in Cleveland.
Well, I can move on from that. I just wish he had that opportunity this year, but... Either way, moving on to some happy times. My Dolphins.
Oh, yeah, I forgot they played.
Oh, yes, they played, and they won. They beat the Bills. They beat the brakes off the Bills, actually. that was a clinic put on. And Tua threw 2 interceptions, and he only had 173 yards, sir. And y'all still, I mean, not y'all, but, you know, they still lost by a significant margin.
Yeah, I see that. I'll be honest, I didn't watch this game. I actually didn't even really realize this game was on. I didn't catch a lot of the earlier games. I'm guessing this was probably an early game.
Yeah, it was a 1 o'clock game.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't catch any of the 1 o'clock games. I was still on the road. But, I mean, I ain't got no skin in this one when it comes to what the game was like, because I didn't, and honestly, I didn't watch any of the highlights. I guess I didn't realize this was the game this week for them. Shout out to the Dolphins. I'm just going to say that. I don't know what they came in on, or maybe what the Bills didn't come in on, but, I mean, Josh Allen had a game. I mean, he really did. I don't know what happened there. I mean, James Cook looked poor. He had a fumble. Who else had a fumble? So did Josh Allen. Yeah, I mean, wow, you guys held him to under 100 yards of rushing altogether. 87 on 22 as a team. That's crazy. Huh. Hey, kudos to your Dolphins. I mean, it's a little too late, but I mean, hey, take them where you can get them. If you can mess up a rival, go for it. Huh. Arcane had himself a game. 2,274, two touchdowns. Good grief. That's why y'all had a good game. He went nuts on the ground. He had himself a couple more touches. He could have had a 200-yard game. Okay. Jalen Waddle. I, you know what? I do remember seeing that on my fantasy league. He had got a touchdown. 5 for 84, Tutty. Arcane had himself 51 yards in the air. So, I mean, Boa put himself over, what, 200 yards as a team, or a total all-purpose yardage? Okay. All right. Yeah. I mean, well, it was him and Waddle that carried that.
Once again, they always have a game, sir. That Waddle and Achane are always the ones that do the most for that team, especially since we were going into this. There's no way anybody had the Dolphins. The spread was 8.5, and they still
they covered that and then some.
That money would have been perfect for the Dolphins to win by 10 or more, sir.
And then the turnaround won by
17. Whew. Oh my gosh. But either way, I just got to shout out to my Dolphins. They had a beautiful game. I wanted to get into the Jaguars and the Texans, sir. The Jaguars held that game so well. And I was so surprised. I was like, man, the Jaguars got this. But I actually had them on my Moneyline parlay. And they were holding it. And I was like, yeah, they got this. There's no way. How do you let up 26 points in the fourth quarter? 26 points and you don't score a single time?
And let me add in here. They lost to the Davis Mills-led Texans, sir.
Sir, there's no way that they dropped this game like this.
They most certainly did. And if we're being... Hold on. Wait. So Davis Mills had two passing touchdowns. I knew that. I forgot he had a rushing touchdown. Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's nuts. And he had a fumble. They still won that game. What else did they do? Yeah. Yeah, Nico Collins had himself a baller game. That's a big part of it. Dalton Schultz, shout out to a tight end doing it. Yeah, I remember watching bits and pieces of this game when I could. I watched some of the highlights. Yeah. I'll be honest, though. The only reason I had the Jags to take this was because of Davis Mills. If this would have been C.J. Stroud, I think this probably would have been a much better game all around for the Texans. Not that they did bad. But, again, as I shout out over and over and over, and I'll continue to say it, games are won in the second half. 26 points in the fourth quarter, sir. That is what I'm talking about. That is what makes the NFL great, and that is what I love about it more than I love about college. College is a different atmosphere, right? Everything's driven by whoever's winning in the first half usually wins in the second half, especially if it's not a closer game. In this situation, they were down 20-10 at half. They gave up got no points and gave up 9 in the third quarter. So they were down 29-10, and then their defense locked down, held them scoreless, and they put up 26 points offensively. I love it. I love how the NFL has gotten a lot better with that. I feel like the style of play is much better, and second half comebacks this year have been a thing of beauty. But this wasn't C.J. Stroud's team. No. It's Davis Mills.
This scorecard just reads ridiculous. field goal, touchdown, touchdown, field goal. I'm sorry. Let me say that again. Field goal, touchdown, touchdown, all by the Jaguars for the first and second quarter. And then we got a field goal finally by the Texans. Then we got a field goal and a touchdown, one by the Jaguars, and then we got one by Woody Marks for 1 yard. Then you got the third quarter, no scores from the Texans. Then you got a field goal and a touchdown for Etienne for 6 yards. Then fourth, you go into the fourth quarter, and all you see is touchdown Texans, touchdown Texans, touchdown Texans. Like the scan down is crazy.
I'm telling you, games are being won in the second half. This isn't a whoever leads in the first half wins every game now. It's not that way anymore. Comebacks are real this year.
I love it. Speaking of comebacks, the Bears. Sir, the Bears did they thing. I love it. You can never count the Bears out. You just can't. Even when they're losing. Even when they're losing. Caleb Williams is acting phenomenal. He only threw for one touchdown, but it mattered.
It did.
And then he rushed for the last one, 17 yards. So it was a thing of beauty, all right? It was a thing of beauty, well, and I can't help but say they had a touchdown and a field goal. They had a touchdown in the first half and a field goal in the second going into the fourth.
But again, beautiful comeback. My only concern in this game, and as to why I don't give the Bears more, the Giants are broken. Okay, they after that game they fired Daboll, so he's gone. So they've already moved along. They know that it's over. But this is a broken team, especially on offense, and there's something to be said for what they've made with very, very little. When you have so many key players go out for not just a few weeks, but for the entire year, it does matter. So the fact that they could have won this game, and if they could have held on defensively, it definitely matters. The Bears shouldn't have struggled like they did. But again, like you said, you can't count the Bears out. Caleb Williams has, I'm not going to say he's been feasting this year, but he sure isn't in famine. Some of that is because he has a good core around him. I hate to say it, as much as the Packers have owned the Bears for so many years, this is a different era in the NFC North. This is a very ugly, very brutal division. And the Bears are going to give us a run. I think the Vikings are going to wind up bottoming out in the NFC North. I think it's going to be a toss-up between Green Bay and Chicago for second place. And I think ultimately Detroit's winning the division. As much as right now it could look the other way, I think that's how it's going to wind up going. I think the Lions are just still the best team all around. Unless Jordan Love gets better. Unless he gets better, he's going to keep us fighting for second place.
All right. Moving on. I got a couple of honorable mentions to put in there. And then we're going to get into the night games. The Ravens beat the Vikings. It wasn't a spectacular game, but, you know, it was something worth mentioning.
Yeah.
Also, the the Seahawks beat the Cardinals.
Profoundly.
Just brutal. I'm not going to say anything because they were supposed to, but honorable mention nonetheless. The Lions, my last honorable mention, they beat the Commanders. Marcus Mariota didn't have any answers for anything that was
going on. As he shouldn't.
That was you know, he had two touchdowns thrown in the game, but too little too late, in my opinion. So one of them was definitely a garbage time touchdown. So once again, we'll take it. But honorable mention nonetheless.
Agreed.
The Lions are supposed to definitely beat them. But one game that I definitely want to get into is the Rams and the 49ers, because I did not see the Rams beating the 49ers like this. 49ers have been doing a great job on offense and defense for the last few games. And this way, in this game, they just fell short on both sides of the ball. And though Mac Jones tried his hardest, you know, 300 yards, three touchdowns, he went 33 for 39. These numbers don't actually explain why they lost, if we're talking about offense. But defensively, they caught a lick, because Mac Jones put up four tutties. You know, 280 yards. He had his own 300-yard game, if you were being honest. Kyren Williams with two touchdowns and 73 yards with 14 carries. That's, we're talking about, you know, the tale of two offenses. One of them was able to outdo the defense in incredible fashion, and then the other one, though, had points and probably would have beat a couple of other teams this week. They weren't beating the Rams like that.
The reality of this game is that this game was never, at any point in time, did the 49ers ever take the lead. This is one of the rare games. Now, I should be careful. This is one of the rare games that wasn't necessarily won in the second half. This game, yes, they put up 14. The Rams did in the fourth quarter to kind of put a stop to the Niners' efforts. But in this particular and rare instance, this game was won in the first quarter.
They put up 21 points to 7 within the first half.
Yeah.
The game was pretty much over and done with. Because
the reality of it just was, really they responded. They put up 14 points in the first quarter. The Niners, after that, did not go a single quarter without scoring. The problem was they could not get a defensive stand in the fourth quarter. Now, granted, even if the Rams would have went scoreless, they would have still won, but they still would have in the fourth quarter. If they wouldn't have scored at all in the fourth quarter with what the Niners put up, they still would have won by two. But it would have been a more close and realistically – I think what everyone anticipated, and for the numbers, what it would have been realistic for.
I mean, however, if you look at the numbers, once the Rams went up, they just responded to how the 49ers were doing.
Correct.
49ers put up 7. Okay, let's put up another 7 just to keep it far. All right, they put up 7 in this quarter. Let's go ahead and do it this. Oh, they went ahead and put up 12. We need two more touchdowns on their head just to make sure that they know what's up. Like, it was really just a response thing.
Yeah.
They never really played after that.
This is one of those games that's like they won in the first quarter. They got into the Niners' heads. They won defensively. They won offensively. And after that, like you said, it was responding to whatever they did, pretty much matching them until the fourth quarter. They just threw a couple extra points on top. This was definitely not a second half victory. This was a we beat you in the first quarter, and for the rest of the game, we just chilled. You did something, we did something right back. You know, they did exactly what they needed to do to win, and ultimately that fourth quarter, even if they would have went scoreless, they would have won. But they won their game. They did their thing, and they beat them pretty well. But this isn't a game that impresses me in some regards, because for a team – If this was a terrible team they were playing, I think I would have been a little bit more like, all right. But the Niners ain't no team that you should slouch on. And the reality of it is if they struggled, that wasn't good. The fact that they matched the rest of the game, yes, I think it does show that they were taking a breather. but I think they struggle more than most people would think. Because if I would have been the Rams, I would have said, let's go ahead and make this win a big deal. Let's not just match them number for number after we put up a lead in the first quarter. They should have kept pouring it on. That's the only thing I think that they should have done differently, and I think that is why I don't necessarily ride this game out to be a stellar, flashy win. This was just a good win, but it wasn't as good, I think, as maybe a lot of people might think. I think there are some issues here, but I don't know that it's because of bad decision-making or anything. I think it's just that they let off the gas. And I think that's your problem. You can't let off the gas against a team like the Niners because, let's be clear, Christian McCaffrey can't ever forget about him. He only touched the ball 10 times. Or, I'm sorry, 12. He ran 12 for 30. You know, we could have seen a totally different game if CMC had really got going, you know. So I understand this is a good win, but I do think there's an argument that the Rams maybe let off the gas a little bit too much. They should have kept pouring it on and made this a better win.
I always say that, though. I hate when teams let off the gas. If you're scoring, score, man. It doesn't matter if you score 15 times in the quarter. Who cares? We're not talking about bad sportsmanship. We're talking about we're playing a game. If I'm playing it better than you, what are you talking about? Like, there's no other, like, we can be friends after this. I'm here to beat you in a phenomenal fashion. If I can, I can. And, like, just like that, who was it? Trayvon Henderson this week. They were, he asked permission to go into the end zone when he just broke out for a crazy run. Like, yep. What? Ain't no way you was even thinking about going down after that. Get in the end zone. What are you talking about?
I'm so glad he brought up Trayvon.
The Patriots had another great game, sir. I almost didn't mention them. But I'm glad we're talking about them because Drake May and Baker Mayfield went at it, and Drake May won. Period. Point blank.
That is because of good old Henderson. Drake May did his job, but Trayvon did the rest. That boy had 14 carries. That's it. 14 for 147 yards on the ground. That is some crazy numbers, and honestly, between him and Mac Hollins, Williams had himself a nice little catch, too, for that touchdown, a 72-yard touchdown, which, hey, not knocking. The Patriots did everything right. They just, Baker can't do it all. Baker can't do it all, and that's what he's doing right now, and, I mean, That's the problem that is happening in Tampa. And unfortunately, that loss is not a good sign for the future of the Bucs this year. I think it's a huge problem that Baker can go and throw three touchdowns and no interceptions, 273 yards, only sacked twice, but that's all you get. Like, what do you got to do? I mean, Egbuka had himself a phenomenal game, 6 for 115 in a tutty. Johnson had 4 for 42 with 2 touchdowns. I mean, Kate Otten had himself a decent game for the first time in a while. I mean, everybody was doing right when it came to everything, except, I mean, and by the way, they had no fumbles, no interceptions thrown. They even picked off Drake May once. Everybody did everything right except for the running game. And that, I think, is why they lost. And they only lost by 5. This wasn't some big win for the Patriots. This
This was a battle. This wasn't something to be snubbed at. And I almost forgot about it, sir. But this was a nice game. I never got to catch it, but I caught all the highlights to it. And that, and that's exactly why I brought up the fact. I hate the fact that he asked for permission to score. Score, bro. If they just let you break out for 69 yards, score. That's what the job is. It doesn't matter. I don't care. You can talk about sportsmanship and if they're already down, why beat up on? Because they're down. And the name of the game isn't let up. This isn't boxing. When they hit the ground, you're not supposed to stop stomping them. Any team could come back at any time for any amount of reasons. So why let up off of the gas? Now you just let the defense play it out and see what happens. I'm just going to respond back to whatever you got going on. No, that's not okay. It's not okay. I'm not even talking from a parlay perspective. I'm talking from just a game perspective. Why do I want to see you let up off the gas when you were just putting all BTA? Like, it doesn't make sense.
The only time that there's a valid reason to do that, because there is one, and that is generally when you're at the tail end of a game, especially obviously a tight game, and sometimes you need to run some clock down. You got the lead, you're down to your last few seconds, whatever it may be. You know, you don't want them to get the ball back.
If it's about winning the game, I can understand. But we're talking about anything else. Anything else. It doesn't make sense. I don't care if you score 15 times per quarter. I don't care if that score ends up being 102-0. Score, bro. They're letting you do it. Get your stats up. That's another, like, bro, get it in there. It doesn't make sense not to pad your stats. Isn't this your career? Isn't your career based off of your stats? It's not about how many guys called you, bro. I know that much. And then you let up the gas, and then the team ends up coming back and winning.
Oh, well, we were just trying to be good sports.
No! That's not... You deserved the loss at that point. You didn't want the win. Otherwise, you would have kept scoring. You would have kept doing what you did in the first quarter into the last quarter.
I'm with you. All right. I know we're kind of running out of time. There's definitely something...
We're actually over time, sorry.
Yeah. So I want to wrap it up. There's more games to talk about. We can kind of fill this in, guys, on the next episode. But there are a couple of quick things. There's five things that I want to ask. Is it overreaction or is it an adequate reaction? First question. Would you say that the Dolphins beating the Bills, is this something that is a serious problem or is this an overreaction to this game?
It's a serious problem for the Bills. No doubt about it. The Bills, this is third or fourth game that they've dropped to a team that they had no business dropping to. And I love the Dolphins. You know, that's my team. But all three of their losses have came to it from teams that are statistically beneath them in every single way. Once again, you need to be a fly on the wall in the Bills locker room because whatever the problem is, it's not on the field. Those players are slacking off in some other way.
All right. Okay. I definitely agree. It's not an overreaction. second one, the Colts struggling with Atlanta, even after getting Sauce Gardner. Is this an overreaction or is this not an overreaction?
It's overreaction. We're going to see the Colts do some phenomenal things continuously throughout this season.
Do you think that Sauce Gardner was worth two first-round picks?
Yes. Sauce, he almost had his first interception as a Colt on that in that game. So we're going to keep faith in the Colts, and the Colts don't have anything to worry about per se because they still pulled out that game, and they pulled it out in a good fashion. It's not like they, you know, it's not like they just barely pulled it out. You know, they pulled it into overtime and then pulled it out crazy. You know?
Okay. I think I know what the answer to this question is going to be, but Denver's offensive problems hitting a new low against the Raiders. Reaction or not?
I'm disgusted by the Broncos.
We're just going to move on. I'm not even getting
into this. Yeah, okay. I was going to say, if you really want me to get into it, we can put another 15 minutes onto this episode. Because I am disgusted.
We've already done this. Okay. Fourth, the Bears needing a fourth quarter comeback to beat the Giants. Overreaction or no?
No, the Bears are phenomenal. And we're about to see some great things from Caleb Williams too. Maybe not the best things, but we're going to see some things. I can promise you that.
Well, okay. And I do want to point out, for those who don't know, Jackson Dart did get sidelined with a concussion at the end of the third quarter. And of course, Rusty Russ took over for him. So I'm sure that had some part to play in this. However, I agree. I wouldn't call this an overreaction. This one, I guess it was an overreaction. It's an overreaction because it's not really as big of a problem as they have to say. This one is not an overreaction. I think this is a problem. Carolina losing to the Saints and Tyler Shook's second start.
Yeah, that's a problem. The Saints have their own set of issues, and the Panthers shouldn't have dropped to them. So let's go ahead and say that's an appropriate reaction.
Okay, so to recap real quick then, Buffalo taking a blowout loss to the beleaguered Dolphins is definitely not an overreaction. It's a problem. The Colts struggling with Atlanta after the Sauce Gardner trade, overreaction, not a big deal. They still got their win. Denver's offensive problems, It's not an overreaction because their offense they win, but they have to win ugly games, so it is a problem. The Bears, of course, that is an overreaction. They are a good team. They wind up beating a much more further injured Giants than coming into the game. But I do believe it is an overreaction because I think they've been doing really well this year, as much as I hate to say it. And then finally, again, Carolina losing to the Saints, that is a problem because it shows that the Panthers just don't have, in my opinion, the capacity to pull out the big wins consistently. So they drop the easier games. They get the big wins when they can, and they turn and they just bottom out against less competitive teams.
True enough.
So, okay. All right. Well, I don't know about you, but I think this is a good point to call it a wrap. There were a few other games. Well, not really a few. There was really only one, the Chargers and the Steelers game. That one, 25-10, the Chargers have been doing good. The Steelers are on a little bit of a slide right now. This is the typical time of year when Rodgers starts to struggle come the holidays. This is nothing new.
Bones in the cold, sir.
Yep. Bones. And he went to Pittsburgh. He went from Green Bay to Pittsburgh, sir. I'm sorry. He went from Green Bay to New York, then to Pittsburgh. So he stays in the cold a lot. Don't know why. And he always does worse at this time at his age. 25-10. I think that's a wrap on that. There really ain't much to talk about. Eagles and the Packers are currently playing. It's tied 0-0. Just saying 0-0 going into halftime or here in a few minutes. Crazy talk. We'll talk about that later, guys. Do you have any other final thoughts on anything, Will?
No, but I did want to go ahead and give a shout out to our sponsor. If you made it this far into the video, we always want to inspire you to do great things. And speaking of aspiring, I just got me another case of Aspire in today. I tried that fruit punch one, like you said, sir, and it was pretty good to me. I'm about to try a couple of other flavors, but all in all, you guys, of course, we receive a commission from you doing all this, but we wouldn't tell you to use it if we didn't like it. And for me, energy drinks are a thing. They are a way of life. I've mainlined them for the last few years, and this one is one of the favorite ones that I like because it doesn't have that energy shot taste, that bitter back end. It makes you enjoy the drink. So go ahead and use that code BEYOND. It's posted on all of our platforms. That is BEYOND. Get you a discount, get you a case. Me and him both have used it. It works, and you'll love it.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for tuning in again, as always, and we will see you next time.
Peace.